Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:45 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 26th. Well, Jay Powell just finished speaking and he was as clear as day. He said that interest rates are more than likely going to start rising in March, and that's when they're going to finish their tapering. And at some point after that, then they're also going to begin the runoff. And he also made an allusion to the fact that the market has priced in three interest rate hikes, and he did nothing to either contradict or encourage that statement, but he accepted it, or he used it as an example to say that the market is getting the forward guidance from the Federal Reserve and interpreting it correctly. So that's pretty much telegraphing that the Federal Reserve wants to raise rates three times this year. And now we're starting to see the stock market pulling back, because one of the other big questions that was being asked today was how much attention do the Federal Reserve pay to what's going on in the stock market? And what he said was it's one of the things that they look at, not the only thing. Of course, the other thing that they look at is the health of the financial system. And one thing that he was also very clear in stating is that financial conditions are going to get tighter. So when we look at this financial conditions index, well, it confirms that rates and I guess the financial condition environment has been extraordinarily loose and it's ticking higher. So it ticked higher again yesterday and it's going to tick higher again today when it's updated. And this is obviously something that is going to weigh on stock markets. When we go back and look at the history of this measure, well, obviously the environment is extraordinarily tight during the credit crisis. It was also very tight in 2015 and 16, and we had a meaningful stock market pullback during that time. And that was also coming from levels that at the time at least were as close to record levels of accommodation as we'd seen. And then we start to see financial conditions become really easy again in 2017, following the really spectacular advance on the stock market fueled by the Trump tax cuts. So the Federal Reserve started to tighten. Then of course we had the big tightening during the pandemic panic, and now we're starting to see it again. So then let's go back and look at that NASDAQ 100 chart on a weekly longer term basis, because we're now below the 200-day moving average. This is a major trend in consistency. Not only has the index failed to hold the breakout, it's pulled back into the underlying range, which was then an additional inconsistency. It has failed to find support in the region of the 200-day moving average, another inconsistency. And now it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's an additional inconsistency. And it is now failing to push back above the 200-day moving average. So we had a really benign environment. Maybe we should just take all the history from before the pandemic and look at the trend up to the end of 2019. And it was characterized by a series of ranges that were one above another. And during medium-term corrections in 2011 and 15, 16, and then again in 18, the index found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So we're way overextended relative to the 1,000-day moving average. The market could pull back by 3,000 points and still only just about approximate the region of the 1,000-day. And if the Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates and is intent on tightening financial conditions in response to a tight labor market and rising inflation, well, then there's the real possibility that that's what we're going to have, a medium-term correction down into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So that would take a lump out of the valuations of the major companies. What I found particularly interesting yesterday was when I was recording the broadcast, Microsoft had just reported their earnings and they came in with strong profits and their first $50 billion quarter, and it was about $500 million more than they thought they were going to make, or at least the market thought they were going to make. And then they also said that cloud revenue is due to slow down. Well, the stock opened 7% higher in here today. It's not 7% higher right now, and it's coming back down again. So we've had a bounce, and now we're starting to see that being unwound. And this heightened volatility is certainly something that's going to pique the interest of short sellers. The VIX index, having pulled back in early trading, is starting to rise again. So there's obviously the potential here that we could be in for a much more choppy environment. And against this background, I think it is worth highlighting that it's not everything that's pulled back really sharply. And we've seen some sectors doing quite well. So the FTSE 350 banking index was up in a dynamic manner in here today. And a number of the UK banks are beginning to march higher. I thought Standard Charter in particular was interesting because it's in the process of breaking out of a base formation. And it really pulled back very sharply in 2019, and or I guess the end of 2019 into the beginning of 2020, and made a new low all the way down into the end of 2020, when just about everything else was recovering. Standard Chartered made a lot of loans to a lot of mining companies, and then they went sour in 2015 and 16, and it hasn't really been doing anything since then. But if they continue to be interested in the mining sector, well, then perhaps they're going to start to attract additional interest. So then, if we think about the FTSE 350 mining index, well, it was in negative territory today, and it's been in a corrective phase for most of the last year. And obviously, what's happening in terms of liquidity is important. And if financial conditions are going to continue to tighten, well, then that does put pressure on some of these companies like the wind and the solar sector, and they were also unable to hold the majority of their advances in here today, and they're both approximating the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But access to cheap liquidity is integral to their business plans. And then we can think about the hundreds of billions, if not trillions, that have been allocated to the energy transition. And if financial conditions are tightening, where's the money going to come from? So this is obviously an important question. But what I also thought interesting today is that copper was reasonably steady, but started to pull back in late trading. So there's the possibility here that we're going to see some additional weakness coming through in the industrial resources sector because of these financial conditions tightening, and gold prices pulled back from the $1,850 again level again in here today. So I was saying that there is an absence of downward dynamics. Well, this is a downward dynamic, and no question about that. So pulling back once more from $1,850 and suggesting that we might be in for some additional ranging in here, and certainly need for support building. The hawkish tone of the Federal Reserve will certainly be parsed and analyzed by investors over the coming days and weeks and months. And of course, it's going to also put upward pressure on the dollar. So then we can think about Hong Kong, where the market has pulled back violently over the course of the last year, and it's beginning to try to steady in the region of the lower side of this longer term range. But if the dollar continues to have a tailwind of rising interest rates in the USA, well, then that's going to continue to put pressure on Hong Kong in terms of borrowing costs, and then less demand for speculative activity as well. We've definitely seen that some indices in Asia have been comparatively steady, like India. But that's not going to last if we look at a global tightening cycle and risk getting taken off all over. And perhaps the biggest barometer of risk appetite is in Bitcoin. So the price was up nearly $2,000 at one stage, and now it's up about 500. And so far, we've had the upside key reversal and no real follow-through on the upside. And you do need follow-through after an upside key reversal. So this is still a downtrend. It has not yet been able to push back up into the overhead range or sustained a move above the 40,000 level. So we're still in a corrective environment overall. And of course, Bitcoin's a risk asset. So there's obviously potential here that some risk assets are going to experience stress. And then oil prices remain quite steady. So the price got up to test the $90 area. Now, there's obviously going to be some push and pull around this level because if tighter financial conditions impact growth, well, then demand for oil would necessarily fall. So then that should help to mitigate some of the upward pressure from energy prices. But so far, at least, we haven't had anything in the way of clear downward dynamics, and of course, geopolitical tensions are also helping to support the oil price, and not least because of this uncertainty around what's happening between NATO and Russia in Ukraine. But oil prices are higher today than they've been at any point since 2014, so it does raise the specter of energy price inflation being a significant issue. Then we can also think about some of the agricultural commodities. Corn and soybeans remain quite firm and pushing up and out of their respective ranges. And then some of the food processors like ADM are pushing up to new all-time highs. So while we certainly have pressure starting to come to bear on the cloud sector, excuse me, and significant trend inconsistencies creeping through here, and most particularly for the cloud ETF, where we have the clear failed downside break, and now we're seeing the completion of the Type 2 top formation and massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And this massive reaction does not yet appear to be over in this case. Often, after a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, you'll see a range evolve. We're just not there yet. With I think people were waiting to see what would happen with the Federal Reserve, and now we know there the Fed wants to be a lot more hawkish. So if and I think this is probably the easy way, and often the easy way is the way that a lot of people will analyze what happens in the markets. So it's broken its uptrend on the S&P 500. And we had a massive decline in 2020, and then we had a huge advance based upon really accommodative monetary and fiscal conditions. So then if that really accommodative era has ended and we're going to go back to more normal monetary and fiscal conditions, then the last time we had anything approaching normal was in 2019. So maybe then the stock market comes back to where it was in 2019, and that would be approximating the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So that's a realistic possibility. And certainly when we think about interest rate hikes, the yield curve spread is contracting. Jay Powell was asked about this, and he was quite clear in stating that he thought that 75 was around normal for a yield curve, and that if it does start to accelerate lower, perhaps they will pay greater attention. So this yield curve is now at 70 basis points or 72 basis points and trending downwards. Ultimately, it's going to become inverted. And when we think about the 3-month yield. What I find rather interesting is that the yield itself is still at 18 basis points. So the bond market hasn't even fully priced in the potential that we're going to have an interest rate hike in 6 weeks' time. And I guess they're eventually going to get to that point. And that would suggest that the yield is at least going to get to 25 basis points over the course of the next week or two. When we then think about the other yield curve spread, the 10-year and 3-month, well, this isn't nearly as tight as it was on the 10-year and 2-year. And in fact, it's still advancing because the 10-year yield is rising faster than the 3-month yield. And historically, it's been the 10-year and 3-month has offered a lead indicator relative to the 10-year and 2-year. So this is the exact opposite. And we're seeing much more pressure on the longer end of the curve. And of course, that's also the level at which mortgages are set. It's also, and I guess we should look at the 5-year, because that is at the closest in duration to the average duration of the US government's debt, and yields are up to 1.67%. So borrowing money is going to become progressively more expensive. And then the Federal Reserve also said that they don't see themselves continuing to hold a lot of mortgage bonds. Well, if that's the case, it means that mortgage rates are going to rise. And mortgage rates might rise faster than bond yields. And then that will also have an impact on housing prices. So the Federal Reserve is in no uncertain terms being much more hawkish. And that's going to take some getting used to. And valuations are obviously going to come under pressure as a result. But most particularly for companies that are totally reliant on access to free money. So the IPO index continues to deteriorate and it's well below the 1,000-day moving average. The SPAC index is also continuing to pull back. And then if we think about meme stocks, well, there's even an ETF for memes now. And this, I think, is also really interesting. You can buy an ETF for meme stocks, and it's been around now for about 2 months. And that meme phenomenon is less than a year old. But the fertilizer and potash ETF was liquidated about a year ago. And if we just simply look for an agriculture ETF, then all you have right now are futures. And this veggie ETF is the only other one that's available. And when we think about that one, well, we should also perhaps look at what they own. And it's mostly industrial companies and fertilizer companies. So we don't have an dedicated ETF any longer for just fertilizers. That in order to invest, you have to have exposure to lots of other portions of the market as well. This also tells us that there's not a lot of people invested and that it hasn't been a popular theme. And then if we think about the performance of UK banks and that they're just beginning to break out. Well, then there's one index, but very few ETFs that offer exposure to the sector. So we're starting to see banks doing better. We're starting to see commodities and commodity-related investments doing better. And obviously, with energy continuing to be firm, that should help to support energy-related sectors. But the go-go area for the last decade have been the FANG companies. And they are starting to deteriorate. And most particularly, they're deteriorating relative to the wider market. So on a weekly basis, it's now pulling back into the 200-day moving average, and on a daily basis, it's already below it and is struggling to rebound. So we're definitely seeing a rotation here that the best performing eight companies, the really large mega caps, are not firing in the same way as they were previously, and that other sectors are taking up leadership right now. And I think that's by far the biggest takeaway here, that tightening financial conditions are going to weigh most heavily on the growth portion of the market. And the value sector, as a result, will gain adherence. We've been talking for a long time about the push and pull that we have in markets. Well, with the dollar rallying, you're not going to see quite the same push into emerging markets. But at the same time, there will be demand for value, and there are a lot of markets outside of the USA that don't have the same focus on growth and have considerably more attractive valuations. So value relative to growth looks like it's bottoming in here, and this could quite easily be the beginning of a new investment trend that has legs to run for years to come. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.